You're listening to Sunday Extra on RN. Now, as the search intensified this past week for a Belgian teenager missing at Byron Bay, his father called a press conference to appeal directly to Facebook, the owners of the messaging system WhatsApp. Laurent Hayez believes his son Theo was communicating with someone via WhatsApp in the hours before he disappeared. Here was his argument.
We know that Theo used WhatsApp the night he disappeared. We understand the politics about confidentiality and respect that. However, this is a question of providing assistance to a person in grave danger. It is vital that investigators get access to Theo's WhatsApp account without delay.
The whole point of WhatsApp, like Signal, Telegram and others, is that it uses end-to-end encryption, meaning the messages are private and cannot be accessed even by law enforcement or other government agencies. That, at least, is the selling point. Now, some commentators have come out to support Mr. Hayez, saying notions of social media privacy cannot apply when a life is at stake. Others argue the right to privacy trumps everything. Either your communications are always private, or effectively, they argue, they never are. So let's unpick this a little. Professor Katina Michael is from the Faculty of Engineering and Information Sciences at the University of Wollongong, and Vanessa Teague is an Associate Professor in the School of Computing and Information Systems at the University of Melbourne. Vanessa Teague, if I can start with you with a basic question. If it wanted to, what can WhatsApp do to access messages on its system?
The way that WhatsApp is supposed to be designed is that when you're sending a WhatsApp message, you negotiate a key with the other person at the other end of the communication, and only you and the person that you're communicating with know the key to decrypt the message. A properly encrypted WhatsApp message isn't available for decryption, even by the host of the communication system. WhatsApp, and indeed most end-to-end encrypted services, don't try to hide metadata. In other words, who's communicating with whom and when and what time and how often and how big the messages are and so forth. But unless they've specifically undermined the end-to-end encryption of the message, they can't decrypt the message.
So the official response that we've been able to obtain from Facebook is that WhatsApp cares deeply about the safety of our users. They say, assisting police in accordance with applicable law and our terms of service. Professor Katina Michael, what might that mean?
That basically means the terms of service when you sign up and download an application, in this case the application is owned by Facebook, provides you an outline of your agreement, and you click on accept and you download the app and you start using the app under those terms and conditions. Here, what we know furthermore is that the user's name, the last seen date, the IP address, and certain basic information, but as Vanessa said, not the content of the messages, would be available. So what we do know in the case of the young man who is missing is that he had a group chat at 12:20 a.m. on June the 1st. That is a few hours after he left Cheeky Monkey. So if we know the user information, the to and from, or the sender and the receiver, which we do for that group chat, the big question is, why are we still persisting to get the hidden encrypted data of Mr. Theo Hayes's application rather than going to seek individual inquiry from the people that received or sent information to him in that group chat, if indeed we do have the names of those individuals, which, according to WhatsApp, it can provide that metadata. It can't provide the content, which would give us more context, perhaps, for his disappearance and his vanishing. But we do have those high-level metadata principles.
So I guess the question there is, you're saying that the content of the conversation may not matter if we know everyone who was involved in the conversation. You can go and follow up with them to see what might be said. But what if the content of the conversation was to suggest some, and let's take it out of this individual's case, we know nothing about his case particularly, but if it was someone had gone missing and their last communication had been, say, about doing a drug deal or meeting up to do something, you can go to those individuals and they could deny anything like that. They were just having a chat, see you later, had a great night, nice to meet you. Whereas in fact, it's the content that would give police the opportunity to narrow down much more closely what might have taken place.
I totally agree with you here. Having a little additional context information for that last particular group chat that he made from Facebook would have been important beyond a doubt. And perhaps one could argue that even some of his previous communications in group chat would have been equally important.
The Facebook response says that they assist police in accordance with applicable law. What does that actually mean in practical terms? Who do you have to go through the police force if you want to get that metadata even about who someone might have been communicating with? Or can any individual, you know, even just a father operating outside the police, go and say, look, I haven't seen my child for a couple of days. Can you help me with this stuff? What is the law in terms of entitlements here?
So the law requires us to take out a warrant if we require personal information from about any individual. And the Australian Federal Police is a member of the Australian government. It is a body that can use a warrant process to request further information from a private corporation or an entity. In this instance, someone is missing, someone's life is in danger. We could request more information, and we could put in a request through the technical assistance request powers that were approved last December, just before Christmas time, which is voluntary help that a company could give, which possibly has been enacted in this case. We don't know. We don't have that level of detail of visibility. If the Australian Federal Police felt it was their duty and the cases, or more than one, were proportional, they may actually request something even more detailed, which is a technical capability notice. The ability to build a new function to help police get at a suspect's data or at a victim's data, for instance.
Now, this is pretty interesting because that piece of legislation that was passed late last year, it was basically rushed through Parliament, gives, some people argue, Australian authorities greater powers to intervene into the technology to gain information about users than exists anywhere else in the Western world. Professor Vanessa Teague, what does it potentially do in terms of granting law enforcement and security agencies access to those messages in Australia?
The technical capability notice is a demand that company implement some new capability to extract some information that they don't otherwise have, or don't otherwise have access to. And I think the really important thing to understand, particularly when we're talking about a case like this, is that although it was billed at the time by the proponents of the legislation as giving police access to encrypted messages, it's really important to understand that there's absolutely no guarantee that such a capability can even be built. And in the particular case of past end-to-end encrypted messages, it's probably just not possible to retrospectively build a capability to decrypt them.
Well, plainly, terrorists, pedophile rings, other serious criminals, even foreign spy networks benefit from knowing that they might have a capacity to encrypt information and no one can come at them. Where is the balance, Katina Michael, for privacy? You know, have we gone too far down the security end with this legislation that was passed last December, or is it getting it about right?
It's a very good question. I think the Australian government sniffed at one of the outcomes of that saga in the San Bernardino terrorist attacks, where Farouk, who also deceased in these attacks, left a mobile phone behind, which would give access to authorities of his cloud storage of his iPhone 6. And the issue at hand was that the FBI, you know, flex their muscle and told Apple, you know, we know your brand is based on privacy, but in this case, we've had 14 deaths and we want to know what has happened. Apple cooperated with the FBI. FBI said, we'll handle it by ourselves, and got it wrong when they tried to break the passcode and then demanded that Apple provide an access to their iOS operating system so that they could get into the data, into the content, not just the metadata. At that time, FBI went right up, right through to Congress in the US And then this third party, we believe, based out of Israel, a brilliant a security company, Hush Hush, said, well, we've cracked it. We've cracked your iOS version 6. We've gone to the vulnerabilities that, you know, hackers have known before the improvements, and we've done it ourselves. So the FBI lay off all intention from Apple and got a third party to actually access the data. So the story goes. I think when we have these debates, we have to be balanced in our approach and say encryption is vitally important when personal information and intimate moments are recorded. I think on WhatsApp, you'll see on their front page, it says security by default, despite that it is owned by Facebook that has killed our privacy to an extent, but they're saying security by default. So as a consumer, and we have to remember this as parents, as children, as backpackers, as children perhaps suffering with autism, as people who perhaps wander because they have dementia, the application we download for our safety has to be the right one. And so maybe we have to rethink this. And maybe when we do go backpacking, we tell a next of kin, we tell a best friend, here's what I'm doing. I'm providing, and perhaps this service hasn't been created yet, but I've opted into a service that if I'm lost or I can't be found, somebody in authority, a care center, can actually access my whereabouts. I don't want to say WhatsApp is bad. I don't want to say encryption is bad, far from it. What we have to understand is that the applications we opt into have pros and cons. And if we're using them for a particular mechanism to stay in touch with loved ones, we choose the right app for our purpose.
I think that framing it as some kind of balance between security and privacy is completely wrong, because in almost all scenarios, for almost all people, the privacy of your own personal data is a security issue. And if the personal data we're talking about is an intimate photo, a set of banking credentials, your physical location at a particular time, then in the overwhelming majority of circumstances, when we're not focused on a really frightening case like this one, it's an advantage to the person's security to be protecting that information, not from law enforcement necessarily, but from organised crime, random stalkers, ransomware or other theft on the internet. It's a positive thing for our security in almost all of our circumstances to keep our data secure. So I think the dichotomy is completely false.
What about in a case where you have minors? Should minors ever really be using end-to-end encryption?
All of my children use end-to-end encryption. There is absolutely no way I would want my children's private data broadcast across the internet and available to Telstra and any other eavesdropper who wanted to read it. That's not a security feature for a child to have all of their information constantly available to third parties.
And the other thing is, these apps that our children are using with end-to-end encryption, if we look at the terms and conditions, as Vanessa has said, not all of them are actually for children under the age of 13. In fact, most are not. We are not talking about what I would call a child impact assessment, which we need to start thinking about and being wise. And I think Vanessa's taken the right step, as I have with my kids. Please, you know, don't use unencrypted mechanisms. But at the same time, there's this whole argument, so does the parent have access? And most children don't want that prophylactic surveillance to happen upon them 24/7. They have their privacy as children, and their safety is important, but also these companies have had to get with it because they are offering services to young people who are not yet 13, and they are signing up, perhaps giving false information to sign up.
It does show again just how difficult it is to find a balance with technology moving ahead of our capacity, sometimes even to comprehend what is underway there, at least for the general public. Professor Katina Michael from the University of Wollongong and Associate Professor Vanessa Teague from the University of Melbourne, thank you both so much today.